BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. So welcome everyone to Conversation with Emmanuel Tony today in regards to research and the PhD journey. I'm sure many of you know Emmanuel Tony as Manny. And just to introduce myself, my name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. So we've got a really special treat for you today talking about research, and Manny has recently begun his PhD journey with the University of Bristol. So we really want to find out sort of more about that exciting topic and how nurses could get involved in research. So first of all, I have great pleasure in introducing Emmanuel Tony. Could you talk a bit more about yourself, Manny?
Yeah, fabs. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the podcast on the other side of a microphone this time, which is quite exciting. And yeah, thank you to the BDNG for asking me to be here. So talking a little bit about research, just to talk about my background, first of all, is actually dermatology research was my gateway into the dermatology world. So when I first became involved with dermatology, more than just a patient, that is, it was at the skin therapy research unit at Guy's and St. Thomas's. And I became aware of how important research is. So at the time, I was the lead nurse for several clinical trials, so that's investigational products, so those were biologics that are now licensed, so I was involved with those as in phase three studies, but I was also the lead nurse for BADBIR, which I know that you are, Tina, PI for, yes. Principal Investigator for, so that was kind of my first dip into the research world. I then went a bit more clinical, but was keen to try and maintain some of that research. But it was quite challenging, as we all know, ballooning workloads, short staff when it comes to consultants means that the nursing workload is also just huge. So when I saw the opportunity come up at the Centre for Appearance Research at UWE Bristol, I thought, what a great opportunity. I'd recently finished my before applying, I had finished my MSc in clinical dermatology at the University of Hertfordshire, and I wanted to maintain that kind of academia side of things. When I saw this PhD come up, and in all places, it was actually Instagram I saw it advertised. So, and it was for someone that had a background in psychology, which obviously I don't, I'm a dermatology nurse. So I reached out to the primary supervisor. And I just said, look, I'm a dermatology nurse. I've got quite a few years of experience in dermatology and some experience in research. Would you be happy for me to apply based on clinical experience? And their answer was yes. And from there, I applied and I was successful. So I am now month two into my PhD journey. And I will say the word journey already. And I'm following in the steps of other dermatology nurses, such as Professor Steve Ursa and also Leila Katash as well, who's in her second year of her PhD.
It's so exciting, Marion. I was fortunate enough to be on the end of that phone call when you received the news that you were going into PhD world, and I must admit it was so exciting, and you know, I'm really excited for you as well. So I just want to backtrack a little bit on what you've said there. When you said about the importance of nurses getting involved in research, which is absolutely, especially with the four pillars, you know, research being one of them, I think it's absolutely important that nurses all get involved. So have you got any top tips on nurses getting involved in research? For example, you said about the principal investigator role, but maybe you don't need to go to that level. Maybe, you know, just get involved.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So research is actually quite, I almost want to say, a null term, because it incorporates so much. I'd say that a lot of our job already involves research to a certain extent. You know, we are, as nurses, when you look at the BDNG role descriptors, so not just advanced practice, but also band five practice, we should be looking at journals, analysing them, synthesising them, and coming up with our own kind of interpretation of that research. And that can be seen as, you know, part of research. You've then kind of got as well the principal investigator side. That's when you're leading research locally. It might be a national study like BADBIR. And then you've also got the role of CI as well, chief investigator, which is when you're the one that is responsible for the running of the study completely, whether that's in multi-centres or just locally, if it's a more single centre study. There are schemes available. So the NIHR has the associate co-PI scheme. And you can find out more information looking at the National Institute for Health Research website. And part of the aim of that scheme is to get nurses more involved with research. So you don't kind of have to worry about being a principal investigator completely by yourself. The scheme works that you'll be paired up with someone and you take that responsibility together. Anyone that has actually worked in research will realise that as a nurse, you are running the study, and often the consultant, who is often the PI at the moment, will tend to just say, you know, how are things? You say, they're fine. They say, good, sign the paper, carry on. So actually a lot of the monitoring and a lot of the running of the study is already being conducted by the nurse. So schemes like the co-PI scheme just help get you that recognition for all that hard work you're doing, so you can put that formal title on your CV for all the work that often we are already doing.
That's great, and great for our listeners to know about these schemes that are out there, because, you know, sometimes we as nurses, we do have to like fight our corner a bit just to be involved in research. And I think you've hit the nail on the head as well with BADBIA, because I feel BADBIA is a really good supportive role for nurses to be a principal investigator, because the team in BADBIA are so supportive and they really help nurses, and they're really keen and passionate about nurses being principal investigators as well. And, you know, we're really keen for more and more nurses to take on this role. And I'm sure if anyone out there listening about to this podcast, I'm sure we can definitely help with, you know, people becoming more involved in research and being principal investigators as well. And the great news is that recently Manny took over as the chair for the research subgroup, and this has really flown in the last couple of months, really, since you've took over. You've got lots of exciting ideas there, so could you just talk about some of the ideas that you've instigated?
Yeah, of course. So a few years ago, the Dermatology Research Subgroup conducted a survey of BDNG members, and we're in the process of replicating that now because a few things have happened between the last one, including a pandemic, but we won't get into that. And the reason why we're keen to know, to redo this survey and find where we're at as a workforce, is because we want to create educational events that are tailored towards where people are currently at. Rather than just putting these events out there and hoping people attend, we want to actually make sure we're covering topics that you want. So in the process of sending that survey out, so please do keep an eye on the BDNG magazine and also the e-bulletins you get. There'll be a QR code, and would really be grateful if you could complete that survey. We're also in the process of potentially setting up a journal club. This will just be something that people can either log into remotely. We're yet to decide on the timeframes, whether that will be once a month or once every quarter. We haven't yet kind of decided, but that's something we'll also be keen on. We'll be potentially looking for volunteers to also just come log in. And if you feel confident, and I'll be happy, we all would be happy to support you if you want to present a paper and just how you critique it, etc. And also, we're hopefully going to be working a bit more collaboratively with the NIHR and also the UK Dermatology Clinical Trials Network, UK DCTN, which is another great resource out there. You can look at their website. They do educational event. I believe the course is called Bees. They also have some great nursing fellowships out there, which we have a few people that sit on our subcommittee that were fortunate enough to be rewarded that. So again, Leila Katash, we've also got Tracy Thompson as well. And yeah, that's another great resource. So we hope to be working collaboratively with these different organisations to try and further nursing resources available to us and education, so that we can really level up dermatology research.
That's really exciting, Manny. And I think, you know, to have a journal club, I mean, for people to be able to take forward some articles or have that discussion as well, it'll be really exciting. And we'll be launching that hopefully very soon. So we will update our listeners with the updated email from the BDNG or via social media. And the questionnaire now I know is live, so I'm sure you'll be building on the results of that as well. And there's some really, really good information out there on research that I personally, you know, even though I've had a background in research, don't know all about what's involved with the NIHR. And I think that's really exciting that they're now on board with the BDNG as well to carry that forward. So have you any research regional meetings set up with the BDNG?
So at the moment, we're in talks of perhaps doing one this year in October, November time. We haven't yet finalised the date and we're still in discussions and we're still trying to figure out exactly what that event will look like. We're hoping that we can cater to as large an audience as possible. So it won't be a day that's necessarily aimed at a particular band of nurse. So we'll hopefully have enough content from novice to expert so that we can help support people across the whole rainbow of nursing practice. It's also worth mentioning as well, we in terms of NIHR support, one thing I haven't mentioned is about the DCAF and CCAF. So there are other initiatives in place to help nurses get more engaged with research in the role of as the primary supervisor, the primary researcher. So that means you generating a research question yourself and then doing that. As you may or may not know, a PhD can be very expensive. Yes. And the NIHR have a funding stream in place, a few funding streams to help people be able to pay for their PhD. Now, the way of doing that would be application. It's quite a... I'm not upsetting anyone, but it's quite a cumbersome process. So there's a lot of work involved before you can submit. If you look at the NIHR website, the DCAF process, they suggest about 6 months to get a research proposal written. You have to identify your supervisors, exactly what you'll be researching, timelines, etc. However, it's a great opportunity. And what they do is they fund your post and fund your salary. So that means that you will be relieved from your NHS work. Obviously you need to get full approval from your place of work, and they will back pay your salary for that post and pay you your salary as well. Now there are other ways of going about it if you are interested. So I've done it via a studentship, which is slightly different. So a studentship is when a research centre or a charity decide to fund the post. So what that means is you get stipend, which is a livable salary, and then also your university fees are paid for you. So that's another way of engaging if you want to create your own research. There are other ways, like I said, the NIHR, and also engaging with your NHS trust. Sometimes there's more local funding available, but one thing about kind of working in research is that you always need to be thinking about funding streams and what the future, because sometimes it's not unusual to get funding for just 1 year and you need to start thinking, okay, what am I doing for year two, what am I doing for year three, but it is very rewarding and I'd recommend everybody consider it as a minimum.
You're definitely very passionate about the research and the PhD, definitely. I think what you do need to do, though, Manny, is write some top tips in the journal for us, for the BDNG. Yeah, I think, you know, that would be really good because it's a lot of information to take on board today. And I think, you know, to have some top tips and how for people to branch out into research or join the subgroup as well if people have an interest in research. So I'm just going to ask you another question in regards to your PhD. So obviously I know that you've had, you know, a lot of processes and gone through a lot of different avenues to source the PhD for yourself. So going back, when did you feel that this was appropriate for you to start looking into achieving a PhD? What was your thought process behind it?
So my it goes really back to my undergrad days, I would say. So I did my dissertation and it was actually quite an awful experience for me. I really didn't enjoy it. my supervisor, academic advisor at the time at the University of Manchester, wasn't particularly supportive, and it just kind of really impacted my experience of doing it, bearing in mind that that's the first time you're writing something big. And at the time I said, right, I'm not doing anything research, I'm not doing academia, I'll just go clinical. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to start studying towards an MSc in clinical dermatology. It started with my prescribing, actually, and I did an essay and I did quite well. And it was the complete opposite of how my undergrad last, you know, my dissertation went. So I thought, oh, hang on, maybe I'm not as rubbish as this as I think I am. And then as the MSc progressed, I did relatively well and I was very, very proud of myself. And I thought, actually, do you know what? I've put myself off something that is exciting. I'll be honest, one of the things that does drive me as well is, you know, both you and me, Tina, and some of the listeners have been fortunate enough to go to conferences like the EADV, the AAD, BAD, as well as the BDNG, but these mainly doctor focus events. And so many of them, you see research presented that is completely within the wheelhouse and the repertoire of a nurse. And I can't see a reason why there's a doctor up there, you know, blabbering on or, you know, talking about things, which in my opinion, I think falls underneath the nurse remit. It's something that we could absolutely do. So I kind of feel a bit driven by that and want to see more nurses represented on those international stages, because we are in the UK, a very advanced workforce comparative to other countries. That's because we have the legislation behind us where we're recognised as specialist nurses, which not all countries do. Most of Europe, it's not recognised if you're a specialist nurse, whereas in the UK it is. We can prescribe. Again, we're one of the few countries where nurses can prescribe. I believe US and Australia might be the only other two off the top of my head. So we are an advanced workforce, and I think we need to showcase us, you know, as nurses, as dermatology nurses on the world stage to say, look, we can do it. And it was at the EADV last year in Berlin. There was a doctor that had just done qualitative interviews with HS patients or people with HS. And what they were trying to ascertain is they were trying to tweak the scoring systems they use. So they interviewed them and were like, you know, where is it very painful? What's it like? And tried to gain a bit of information about the lived experience. And it was that talk in particular, I was like, that should have been a nurse doing that. We could have easily done that. And there's no reason why we can't. So I'd love to see more nurses doing this and then showing the doctors maybe that they're not so special, but that, you know, we are just as capable as well.
I think that's it. It really is. And, I've been on the back of these conferences, and we are very lucky to go to these conferences as nurses and be recognised for what we do in the UK. And I think we're very fortunate with the role descriptors that we have in the UK as well for dermatology, you know, which incorporates our clinical practice, but also aspects of research and education. And I think as well, we don't realise how lucky we are sometimes. So it's really nice for you to say as well that, you know, you've gone on a bit of a journey here. You know, we're probably a bit more negative about academia at the beginning, which has really branched out to really enjoying academia. And I think we all have these self-doubts, don't we, Manny, about our achievements and what we can achieve. So it's really refreshing for you to be honest and say, you know, that we can achieve academia throughout our career. And also there is extra support out there. And I think it's not always support that we need from our university, possibly. It's support from each other. You know, we can bounce off each other. And I think that is so important, isn't it? And I was just going to ask, Manny, when you go to these conferences, how often do you feel that, you know, nurses are unrepresented within sort of the clinical field when we go internationally?
Definitely internationally, I'd say we are very rarely the focus of anything on those stages as nurses. We might have a doctor mention, oh, the nurses are great, and that's about it. We become this monolithic entity, abstract entity to the side. But there's absolutely no reason why we can't challenge that. I think one of the things I tend to, because as I don't think it's any secret. I do engage sometimes with pharmaceutical companies and I do educational things for people. But one of my feedback I'm constantly giving is, where are your nurses? Who are the nurses that are involved with this? Why aren't you platforming the nurses to be able to showcase their abilities? Because I do think, particularly in, so the UK is pretty advanced for this, but there's some countries that are perhaps a bit more traditional. And I know this is a podcast, so you can't see me doing quotation marks in the air, but I'm doing quotation marks, traditional with their medicine, where it's a doctor-led field. But I think this is going to change for most countries in the next kind of decade or so. We just happen to be at the forefront of that, particularly with, you know, again, the States and Australia. There's talks now nurses are going to be leaving university as prescribers as well. You know, we're going to be such an advanced workforce. So I think research allows you to advance our understanding of dermatology. So I would really recommend engaging.
I think so as well. And I think as well, for me, research, I mean, it's always valuable, but I feel as well when we, you know, obviously we get a lot of evidence based, you know, on our medication that we're prescribing. And I think for sometimes to be able to critique that research or the evidence is also really valuable, isn't it? As a nurse to say, well, this study, does it really, you know, is it evidence-based, is it robust enough? And I think to have even those skills is very important as a nurse. So I'm just going to go back to your PhD, and obviously you've gone through a journey there, and I'll be really, really grateful for your top tips in the journal. That'd be really fantastic for our nurses and members. What subjects are you actually studying for your PhD? Could you just briefly describe what it entails?
Yeah, so I'm at the Centre for Appearance Research, which is actually predominantly a psychology school, health psychology at UWE Bristol. And the original call was for, I believe the title was something on the lines of co-production of a psoriasis awareness campaign with an aim of addressing stigma, a mixed method study. So that's kind of the overarching theme for my project. Now, with PhDs, it tends to not just be one research piece. It tends to be quite a few different pieces that strand together to tell a story, which is the overall question. So I'm still, again, in the early stages, and things might change. And that's one of the things that I would, you know, anyone thinking about it, all the kind of, when I chat with all my peers now, they say, just be prepared for your project changing. You have to be very adaptable because things do change. There might be a publication halfway through your study that completely undermines everything. And then you're like, oh, crap, I have to rethink the next half. So you have to be very adaptable, but at the moment it's kind of put into stages. So the first stage will likely be assessing UK general public's current perceptions of psoriasis. This is something that hasn't actually been done. So what I'm trying to do is measure external stigma. It's been done in France, it's been done in the US, it's been done in Germany, all with various flaws because no study is perfect. So I'm trying to quantify it in a measurable way. So we're using a few different scales to do that. Part two will likely be qualitative interviews with people that do have psoriasis, and then we'll then use the findings from the first two studies to help shape the social media awareness content. So, for example, using the first study, we can identify a specific educational need, i.e. we know that people aged 25 to 30 are more likely to believe that psoriasis is infectious. So we can use that information to target the content to that population. Then part after we've generated the content, we're then talking about maybe using a randomized controlled trial to look at Instagram and its efficacy in changing stigmatizing attitudes towards people with psoriasis, again utilizing the questionnaires that we kind of coagulated together and adapted for trial one. And then after that, the last study will then probably be an observational one that's going to try and quantify its impact in the real world setting. Social media is a very difficult platform. All social media platforms are very difficult to measure your impact. So we're going to try and do that. Now, at the Appearance for Centre Research, my supervisor, Dr. Ella Guest, does quite a few trials looking into research and to address stigma. So there's studies out there already about vitiligo, quite a few on obesity and addressing stigma for that, and also body positivity. So one of my supervisors did this fantastic RCT, randomized controlled trial, on Facebook, where they got women to follow more body positive content, and it actually changed their perception of their own body just by following that. So kind of the take home is social media seems to be able to actually change how you perceive things, and definitely don't be following a load of those profiles that beautify glorify beauty all the time. You know, you get these six packs photoshopped Love Island people. It's not good for your mental health. But I think it's a very interesting area, and it's growing. There's entire books now written about social media and doing trials. So yeah, and it's definitely a space that us dermatology nurses can really shine in.
It definitely is. And I think we've got to take on board social media is here, and we've got to accept, you know, we all use social media, and also the fact that, you know, it can actually be positive. There's positive and negative via social media as well. So what a fantastic topic to study. Absolutely fantastic. So we are nearly coming to the close of this podcast. I would like to ask, could you say three top tips for our listeners today when it comes to research?
Yeah, I'd say be adaptive. I think we mentioned that already. Be ready. Things do change. You might have a very strong opinion or think you know something, and then a piece of research comes out that is the contrary, and you need to have the confidence to say, I was wrong. So be adaptive. Be clear and direct, particularly when it comes, if you do want to be involved with research, be very clear about what your intentions are when it comes to conducting research, because it will make things easier. Sometimes that might mean not jumping in straight away and thinking really a bit more about it, because the last thing you want to do is to, you know, once you start conducting the research, to think, oh, hang on, it would have been really clever if I did that from the start. So just have a real think and be clear. And then one last one, be confident. I think a lot of us, like we've alluded to already, are involved in research in some capacity already. So be more confident with it. You know, whether that's presenting, whether that is interpreting things or presenting at this potential journal club we're setting up, I think you just need to have more confidence and realize that you've got all the support. Oh, and one more, sorry, four, I know, but reach out to people. I'm always happy to receive emails. Tina's always happy to receive emails. You know, dermatology nursing in the UK, we're a small field, and 99.999% of people are very helpful and very lovely. So please, if you need any help, or if you think, oh, I've got an idea, or I'm thinking about doing this, reach out to us. You're not alone, and we'll be always happy to help you connect those dots.
That's fantastic, Manny. Absolutely fantastic advice. And I just want to wrap up this podcast basically by saying, we know there's challenges out there. We know it's difficult when we've got 20-minute, 30-minute consultations to be involved in research, but there's ways about doing this, isn't there? You do not need to be a principal investigator. You do not need to be a chief investigator sometimes. You do not need to be doing an MSc or going through the master's route or going down the PhD route. There is ways of being involved in research, and it's really important for nurses to do that. There's also the dynamic way of nurses, the way we, you know, the way nurses feel and the way nurses can act is so inspiring at times, you know, to grab these opportunities. And Manny, I think you've wrapped that up in a nutshell, you know, to go from your degree to your master's to then go on to a PhD is absolutely fantastic. You've given some great tips there for how for nurses to be involved more. You've mentioned quite a few of the different channels that you can go or reach out to. Networking, as you say, is so important. I'm really excited for you to be running your journal club, which watch out on your email update, and also the BDNG journal for information on the journal. And I think that'd be a really exciting project. Also, the regional study days that will be set up in the near future with Emmanuel, Tony and the team, that were really focusing on research and how to go about being involved in research. And I think all nurses need to take on research within their role. Many nurses reach out to myself and others, you know, asking how to be involved in research. So I think this podcast has been absolutely valuable and some great tips. So a massive thank you to Manny, and I'm wishing you all the best with your PhD, and I really look forward to the publications in the future. And I'm really looking forward to your next article in the BDNG journal on how to be, for nurses to be involved in research. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.